Hello and welcome to The Story Pilgrim. Brighton, my hometown. Well, it's where I live. Before we delve in, remember, thank you for being here. Please come back often. If you haven't already, please click on the follow button, highlight all of those 5 stars, and give us that top-notch review. And finally, share this podcast with just one person. That's my challenge to you today. Please, just one person. Tell them what you enjoy about this and why you keep coming back. But yeah, please keep coming back. Thank you. Brighton has been my home now for over a year. I wanted to tell you a little bit about what I've discovered and why you should come and pay this wonderful town a visit. I am currently in a very lucky position in that I get to travel all over the world, pretty much, in my position as cabin crew. And I am living in England, in Brighton, a place that people will come to for the weekend, for a holiday, for a stag do, for a birthday, for a hen do, for a conference. It is a destination that people will travel to and have a little holiday, a little vacation, a little getaway time. And I need to recognize that. I need to remember that, yeah, I can travel all over the world and go to these places like Cape Town, Hong Kong, Phoenix. I can go on these walks around the UK to St. Cuthbert's Way, the Saints Way. I can go on for a walk along the coast here. But I've got this wonderful town right here. So why don't I go out and take you for a walk, take myself for a walk around it. I've only been living here for a year. And prior to that, I hadn't spent much time here at all. So I don't really, you know it that well. I didn't grow up here. It's very similar to the town that I grew up in. I grew up in Blackpool, a seaside resort. Brighton, a seaside resort. But they are very different in many aspects, and try and point those out as I go for a walk around. Lucky enough to be able to live within walking distance of the town. There's different areas of Brighton, and we're about a 5-minute walk away from an area called the North Lanes, which I'm kind of bypassing at the moment. I'm walking straight down to the Royal Pavilion, which I'll tell you about in a second. And then you have the lanes, you've got the seafront, you've got the pier, you've got the marina, and then you go up to Hove. I mean, it is known as Brighton and Hove, and that's a different area whatsoever. So, yeah, let's have an episode where I just basically take you around where I'm living at the moment, because it is a delightful town, and there's a lot going on here. It feels like a while, it probably isn't, but it does feel like a while since I've had like a theme for one of the episode of the podcast. And I think by doing that, that's kind of putting pressure on me to try and think of, well, what is that, you know? I'm an actor, I do sort of like class myself as a creative, but when it comes to like making things up from the scratch, that's really difficult for me. As an actor, you get given a script, you get given lines, you get given a little bit of a backstory. You can build on that backstory. That's all part of your character development. You can, you know, take yourself down many, many different roads once you've got that basis, that foundation, which is what the writer gives to you, and then the director helps you move around that. But as this little piece that I'm doing here, this podcast, it's up to me what I do with it and how I move it forward and what I put in it and what I don't put in it and where I do and where I don't. I joined an online service called Podmatch, which basically matches up podcasters with guests, with people that might want to come and talk to you. And I lined up several interviews with people on there. I did one interview with a lady over in Boulder, Colorado, who was like a yogini, is that how they say it? She's like a creative coach does all this type of stuff. And we had a lovely chat over Zoom, and it was great, but it just doesn't feel right, that format of me just sitting down and talking to somebody that I have really not much interaction with before. Just felt too contrived, and just didn't feel like it was the right thing to do. And maybe that might be something that comes along later. I'm going down this journey of podcasting and how do you get more people to listen to your podcast. And a lot of, I would say the majority of podcasts out there are people just sat in a studio talking to each other. And to me, that's great, that's fine. Obviously that comes down to the individuals and obviously the subject that they're talking about. But that's not what this is. The Story Pilgrim is about getting out and about, reconnecting to ourselves through nature, through the environment that we live in. And okay, I'm walking around Brighton today. That's a town, but it's heavily influenced by nature and by the geography of where it is. I mean, we're on the coast. Hopefully you can hear the sea there crashing in. It's a very gentle day today. You do get some points where it's extremely, extremely rough. But Brighton, you know, is influenced by that. It's influenced by the fact that it is by the sea, you know, and people come here specifically for that. You know, there's people down here that are paddling away. And so, yeah, a theme for the day. Basically, I think this one for me is not taking things for granted. There we go, seagulls just trying to get a kid's chips out of his hand. He's got his eyes on it. The kid has no idea. Oh, it's a hot dog. Yeah, a seagull will have that. Not taking things for granted. You know, here I am. I'm living in this wonderful town that thousands of people come to every week. And I live here and I can take that for granted. We have a theme, not taking things for granted. I'll explore that more as we go along. Now, I've had varied careers, interests throughout the years, and as I'm getting older, I'm finding I enjoy learning more about history, why things happened, consequences, and the things that make people tick. Brighton's iconic image is the Brighton Pavilion. I've learnt a lot about it recently, and here I am imparting that knowledge in the Pavilion Gardens. I'm in the Royal Pavilion Gardens, which is beautifully laid out. And of course, you've got the Royal Pavilion right here, which is quite a building. Architect John Nash, who did the exterior. John Nash is also famous for doing the Marble Arch, the Royal Mews, and of course Buckingham Palace. But it's down to George IV as to why we have the Royal Pavilion here. George IV, very different to his dad, George III. George III was pretty straight in his life, no controversy. He's the king that is depicted in Mad King George in that film. George IV was his eldest son and was very different, loved life, was very opulent, loved the theatricality of life, loved food, just loved to really, really enjoy it. He's the reason, he was Prince Regent when the king became ill. That's why we have Regent's Park, Regent Street. He was living in Charlton House in London. He had grand designs for Charlton House, but they never came to fruition. What did come to fruition was the Royal Pavilion. Now, just for a moment, now if you're driving, don't do this. But if you are out walking or if you're just at home or anything, just take a moment, stop, close your eyes. I want you to take a deep breath in and I want you to take yourself back to a place where you went on holiday. Anywhere you've been on holiday or even like a little weekend away and you had an absolutely amazing time. I want you to just sort of think back to that. Think about all the sights, the sounds, the feelings that you felt. Deep breath in, let them embody you, and you can open your eyes, and you're now feeling exactly how George IV felt when he came to Brighton for the very first time in 1783 at the age of 21. He came down to Brighton just for a retreat, for health reasons, just to get out of the town, away from his dad, basically. And he had an amazing time. He absolutely loved it down here, so much so that he bought himself a farmhouse, which is the beginnings, the foundations of the Royal Pavilion that we have now. The farmhouse was just like it had a central rotunda building area and then rooms going off it. And over the years, he used his architect, Henry Holland, to design more areas, build it out a bit. Henry Holland, incidentally, is well known for designing the very first iron safety curtain, which was placed in Drury Lane, that I give the tours around there as well. So Henry Holland sort of like built it up, but it was in 1815 to 1822 when George really made the pavilion what it is today, and that's when he got John Nash involved. And John, as an architect, knew that George had a great fascination for the architecture, the arts from the East and from France. So he really drew on Indian architecture, and particularly from Mughal architecture. And obviously one of the most prominent buildings of that architecture is the Taj Mahal. And if you take a picture of the Taj Mahal and of the Royal Pavilion, you can see how that inspiration has taken place. So Nash, over those 7 years, built it up, but he wasn't responsible for the interior design. It was one of the first buildings where the interior design and the exterior design were done by different people. Up until then, the architect would pretty much do everything. But George employed Frederick Crace and Robert Jones to do the interior designs, and they have drawn mainly from like Chinese architecture, Chinese design. There's three big rooms in here. There's the banqueting room, the music room, and the central room, and they are stunning. If you ever come to Brighton, go into the Royal Pavilion, because it's absolutely amazing. The banqueting room has this massive chandelier. It's 30 foot high, weighs over a ton, and it's got like these big dragons, sculptured dragons coming off it. In the roof, there's a painting of like banana leaves and bananas, but they didn't really know what bananas looked like, so the bananas kind of look like walnuts. It's amazing. It's stunning. It really is. Go in there and have a look around. It's just beautiful. But they built this structure, and like Nash, he wanted all these big domes on there. He wanted a big central dome, but he had a problem. He was going to put it over the rotunda area of the house, but the walls weren't strong enough. So what he did, he's designed this like skeletal interior structure using cast iron that basically is able to hold that dome up, and it's the first example of using cast iron in a domestic building. Prior to that, it was all used in industrial buildings. So it was quite innovative for its time, and it stays innovative. It stays stand out. I believe it's very colourful, it's controversial, it's extravagant, and that basically is what Brighton is. It's kind of like the Royal Pavilion has seeped out and made Brighton what it is, and it stands very proud, and it's delightful. It really is. I'm very, very lucky to be living in here. You've got the dome here as well. Now the dome area now is a big concert venue, but that used to be the Royal Stables. And going from the pavilion to the dome, to the Royal Stables, there's a tunnel underneath. If you walk through the gardens, you'll see between the dome and the pavilions, look on the floor and you'll see these round like windows that are flat. You can easily miss them, but those are light shafts going down to the tunnel, and you'll see they're in a line. They're right by the side of the Brighton Museum. You'll find them on the floor, and there's a line of them, and those are the light shafts going down to the tunnel that runs between them. And it was used by servants, it was used by the band when they would come to play for a party. But towards the end of George's life, he did have a lot of ill health and he became quite overweight. He would use that tunnel to come in and out of the palace so that people wouldn't see him. He was a bit embarrassed about how he looked. But yeah, it is stunning. I mean, he passed away in 1830. William the Fourth, his younger brother, then took over, and he lived. He used it as a residence till 1837. He passes away, and then Queen Victoria takes over the reign. She uses it for about 8 years, and the last time she was here was 1845, and she basically was. She just didn't like the publicness of it, because it is right in your face, and she just wanted to be somewhere a bit more secluded. So she sold the pavilion in 1850 to Brighton Council, to the town, for £53,000, which doesn't sound like much these days, but it is, that was the equivalent of about £7.5 million back then. And the town council bought it under the leadership of a gentleman called Lewis Slight. And then they've just developed it from there. 1861, it started to house the Brighton Museum, which is now in the Dome area. 1866, it's the first Brighton Library is in there. During the First World War, they use it as a hospital for the Indian soldiers that were injured, that were helping to fight for the Allies, because they felt like they would feel like that they were at home and they might recuperate better. During the Second World War, they used the tunnel and the storage rooms underneath as an air raid shelter. It's really, really quite a wonderful building. And I've said it already in this little section here that, you know, if you get a chance to come and have a look at it, definitely go in. You can buy a ticket. I think it's £19 to go in, but that is good for a year. You then have full access for a year. Highly recommend it. It's a very, very big part and image of Brighton. Don't worry, I'm not getting any commission or any kickbacks. Hang on, maybe I should. I wandered south from the pavilion, heading towards the beach, when I came across this. If you're a mod, there's one area in Brighton that you have to come to, and that's Quadrophenia Alley. The film Quadrophenia, the 1979 Frank Rodham film starring Phil Daniels. There's this famous scene where two of them fall, they're trying to escape from the police, and they run away and they fall through a door into this alleyway. So if you come down to the Bartholomew's, pretty much where the town hall is, and then you turn down, if you're coming from Bartholomew's, there's a bar called Med. You go down Little East Street and you'll see a little alleyway. You wander down here, and this is Quadrophenia Alley, and it's got lots of graffiti on it. You can probably hear from the way that the sound has gone now, it's tiny. It's literally a couple of feet wide. It's very, very thin. It's just basically two houses that have not been joined, and there's just wonderful graffiti all down it. And yeah, I'm walking through Quadrophenia Alley now, and you come out, and there's a wonderful little shop next to it, Quadrophenia Alley, with some really good mod wear. It's really cool. We are down on the coast here. We're in the county of East Sussex. If you go along the shoreline, as you've heard in previous episodes where we walked along Cuckmere Haven, along Seven Sisters, that's where you have the White Cliffs. You can see the start of the cliffs from Brighton. Down on the seafront now, you can hear the motorbikes. It's synonymous with London to Brighton things, so London to Brighton cycle runs, motorbike runs, mini car runs, They'll take those journey downs, and you get like a group of gentlemen there. I'm presuming, I that's a presumption of mine, isn't it? There could have been the ladies in there. There could have been non-binary people riding those motorbikes. They come down here for a day trip or a weekend out. I'm just walking along the Brighton Pier now. There is one pier that stretches out into the sea. There used to be two. The West Pier burnt down several years ago, and it's just like, literally, it's like a birdcage sat in the sea there now. And I don't think the council have any intentions of doing anything with it. They're just letting it sit there. But the beaches along here are all pebble beaches. And it's quite surprising, actually. You think, you look at them and you go, well, that can't be very comfortable. But when you do actually sit down and lie on them, it is. It's pretty, it's not too bad. It's not as bad as you think. And the nice thing with Brighton is, which is very different to Blackpool, Blackpool pretty much has its promenade and then the beach. Here at Brighton, it has its promenade, and then you can go down, and then there's like another little promenade, which I'll walk along in a bit, which has all little cafes and bars and restaurants on it, and then the beach. So Blackpool, you're kind of separated from the beach with the road. But in Brighton, you can actually go down, and there's lots of, you can get down quite close to the beach and sit down there. Such a plethora of sounds, sights, smells, all tickling the senses. I love it. Now, here comes a warning notice for you when you do come to visit Brighton. You also have to be very aware of the seagulls here. They are very aggressive. And if you're sat outside eating your chips or your sandwich and they see an opportunity, they are going to swoop down and they are going to try and take them. I've seen them many, many a time. Even walking around town, people will just be walking around eating a sandwich and the seagull will literally just swoop down and take it out of their hands, and people are just quite shocked by the whole thing. So I've come down now to that little promenade area, that little walkway that I say is right down on the beach. And down here you've got some delightful little shops, little galleries, beach shops selling shells and just random things, rocks, stones, cards, paintings, postcards, and then there's little lovely little cafes and bars down here. There's a beautiful, on my left, you're going to hear it coming up now, it's just coming to a stop, carousel, beautifully painted horses. That's classic. But I can just step, I literally can just step off this walkway and I'm on the beach. And that's the sound of walking on Brighton's beach. Millions upon millions of little pebbles. There's something very calming and reassuring about that sound. Very wholesome, it's very full. Sound of the waves coming back up and then going back down. And all the pebbles being moved by it. You see them dancing around in the waves as they come in. The sea has been a very, very big part of my life. I grew up next to it. I worked on it on the cruise ships for years. I'm now living by it again. When I moved to Chicago, I was very disappointed that I'd be so far away from the sea, but you've got Lake Michigan there, which, as you stand on the shores of Lake Michigan, it basically is a sea. There's something about standing at a huge body of water, and it just takes you away. The horizon is out there, but it gives you endless possibilities. That what is on the other end of that? Where could I go? What is that? Sometimes you can't see the horizon and where the sky starts, like I did in Hong Kong. It just opens up and invites you to think big, to really put it out there and imagine and create. And it's right here on my doorstep. And again, a thing that I shouldn't take for granted. Also, the security, the warmth that I'm talking about, it can turn. It can be very, very angry. And it's responsible for taking many, 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 many lives over the course of our time on this earth. Yet, I'm just enchanted by it. It's just delightful. Could listen to the sea for a very long time. As I was walking, my mind started to think deeper, reflecting on where I am, both physically and, more deeply, mentally. I have recently gone part-time in my position as cabin crew. Gone down to 50%, which basically means I work for 3 weeks and then I have 3 weeks off. But during the 3 weeks, I do have time off as well. So it means I'm flying a lot less. It also means I get half the salary. I was hoping to fill those 3 weeks off with other endeavours, building the Story Pilgrim, getting more audience for that, making it more of a thing that I can take out to more people and build upon that and build upon my acting career and see where that's going. I'm only a couple of months in, but that change is such a big dramatic drop that it really is quite an adjustment financially, but also just time-wise. I am a very productive person. I really, really love to keep myself busy doing things, but at the same time I also want to keep myself busy doing things that are productive, and I find it very hard to slow down. I find it very, very hard to stop, which is why I guess I like walking, because that kind of helps me to do that. It slows me down from the fast pace of life that we have today with the internet and fast food, and I want it now. Amazon delivery, get it to me. How quickly can I get this to me? Why is it going to take 3 days? I expect it to be there tomorrow. You know, where have these expectations come from? Why, you know, technology has pushed us along so quickly in such a short space of time when you think about it. You know, think about when I was a kid, we didn't have any of these things. We had half day closing, for crying out loud. You know, shops would close on a Wednesday afternoon and that was it. So, again, what is that and how does that fit into my life now as in this stage of as I said, taking things for granted. You know, I had this job that, oh yeah, I've got it there, that's great. Okay, of course I can go down to 50%. You do it and then you're like, oh, okay, that's changed quite significantly. So as far as I'm aware, I have now come to the official boundary as to where Brighton finishes and Hove starts, and it's at the Queen Victoria statue. Along the prom, you'll see a statue of Queen Victoria standing very proud. That's where Hove starts, basically. And if you come down to the front where I'm stood now, there's the Hove plinth, which they are using to put different sculptures on there. When I first came down here, there was a wonderful sculpture called Constellation by Jonathan Wright, and that's moved to the Hove Museum Gardens now. So it's no longer there, or it's no longer here. But now they have a Flight of the Langoustine by Pierre Diamantopoulou. I'm murdering that name. It says here the sculpture was inspired by a broken lobster pot the artist found on Brighton Beach. In his imagination, the washed-up cage from which the sea creatures escaped translated itself into a human story of exodus and release, a dash for freedom. And if you look at it, there's like the front of a lobster pot, and there are people diving through it, reaching through it, running away from it, and they're very athletic. That's the only thing I would say is, why have you got very, very athletic people running away? Where's somebody like me with a little bit of podge on them trying to get out of that lobster pot? I'd be stuck inside it, I wouldn't be able to get out. Walking through Palmyra Square, which is a lovely little rectangle, it's not square, I'm being pedantic again, with a lovely little garden in the middle. There are palm trees in there. This time of year, they put in miniature daffodils and tulips and crocuses. Very colourful. And there's delightful little shops around it. Barber shops, ironing shop, dry cleaning, cafes. Going back to talking about taking things for granted, I haven't been down to this area of Brighton for quite a while. I'll probably say maybe about a year or so. I don't think I've been down here since I moved here. And there's a lot of things that either I didn't remember or have sprung up since that time. And so, you know, it's this constant change going on, you know, whether it's a new shop or, as I said, down at the Hove Plinth, a new sculpture being put up there, different people are leaving their footprint, different businesses are leaving their footprint, the weather is leaving its footprint, all of these things that, you can't keep up with everywhere, you drive yourself crazy, but it's just a nice little reminder to say, you know what, you know, there are things close at hand that maybe you should take more notice of or take advantage of. From Brighton to Hove, back to Brighton. I was really enjoying my walk, taking in as much as I could. However, some aspects of my walk were a little more stressful than I desired. Do you ever find yourself in that situation when you're walking along and you are behind somebody and you're walking at a faster pace than them and you just want to get past them, and no matter how you try to get past them, they will always go the direction. They're not looking at you, they're walking in the same direction as you, but you go to the right and they go to the right. So then you go back to the left, they go back to the left. So you think, okay, they're going to go back to the right, so I'll keep going to the left. But they keep going to the left. No matter what you do, they manage to do exactly what you're doing and you can't get past them. It's really frustrating. And you're like, how the heck does that happen? I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't be in a rush. I should just be patient and walk along slowly behind them. We're coming up to the predominantly the north lanes, the more famous area now, but there's this wonderful shop here which is probably my favorite shop. It's just so bizarre. It's the North Road Timber Building and Joinery Company, and it's just all joint wood, and there's like you come up to the window here and there are a lot of wooden figures of Spider-Man, Superman, Batman. There's cats, there's Homer Simpson, there's Wonder Woman, Pinocchio, little puppets, a mini. There's the staircases in there. it's just delightful. And you walk past it and you're like, what the heck is this doing right in the middle of town? But it's obviously been here a very long time and it's just been swallowed up by the town, but has remained here and stands proud, which is absolutely wonderful. It's next to one of Brighton's more famous coffee shops, the Trading Post Coffee Roasters. This is one of our favourite ones to come and drink at. It's very busy on a Saturday, so I'm not going to go in there today. I did actually want to go into one of my favourite coffee places, Joe and the Juice. Now, I just like their coffee, but also the reason why I like that is because when I was working at Gatwick, I got into this habit. Primarily if I was doing an early morning flight, I would get there nice and early and I would go to Joe and the Juice and I would sit there and just relax before a flight. And I would, you know, watch people around me and see people rushing to go off to different places at Gatwick Airport, because Gatwick Airport is much smaller than Heathrow and you have that much closeness of being close to the passengers. So I have fond memories of that. And when I go to a Joe and the Juice, there's one here in Brighton and there's a couple up in London that I go to if I'm up in London, and it's having that taste of that, because it is a very specific taste that their coffee is, and having those memories all come back. Even though I'm not at Gatwick, I still have those fond memories, and it's one of my favorite places to go just to sort of relax, really. Just as I sip that coffee, it just takes me back to that time, which is really, really sweet. And again, you know, going back to the theme of taking things for granted, you know, when I was there at Gatwick, it was a stressful time. It was a new operation. It wasn't great, but I do have good memories from that, and that's one of them. You know, and that I've moved on from then. And my life is very different now. It's also very similar now, but I can still have those moments. And it's not that I'm wallowing in it and wishing I was back there, not at all. It's just a nice moment to be able to recollect and again reconnect to those parts, those areas, those bits of my life that were good. How do you do that? How do you, you know, reconnect to those times when it was, when everything was great? Do you do that? How often do we do that? Do we need to do that? I know I do, definitely. As I sat there in the coffee shop, you're just watching all the people walk past, and there's no apologies. There's everything, every style that you could see, every gender. It's just a mishmash of people just being themselves, which is delightful, and that's kind of what Brighton is. It doesn't accept any apologies, because there's no need for you to apologise. Sometimes we can take that for granted, and sometimes we don't take that for granted. Sometimes people get very upset by that. It just allows people to be who they want to be. I'm probably making a huge generalisation, because I'm absolutely certain there are people that live here that don't feel that way. But on the surface of it all, it seems very, very accepting here, and it's quite kind of why I've kind of like settled in to it here in Brighton. It is a delightful town. If you have a chance to visit it, come on down and soak it all up. But also on the same tone of that is get out there wherever you are and you live and soak it up. Enjoy where you live. And if you don't enjoy where you live, then maybe it might be time for you to move. That's not for me to say. That's down for you. I'm not in any position at all to demand things or say this is the way you should live your life, because that's not what life is, is it? It's all about experiencing it yourself and you know, you can take the advice of people or not. You, the main thing is you just live the life that makes you the happiest. My mom has always said, as long as you're happy, I'm happy, you know. And if you're not happy with something, an aspect of your life, then do something to make it happy. Now, whether that's relationships with your family, with your friends, with your partner, with your workmates, where you live, how you live, what makes you tick, what doesn't make you tick, all of those things are so central to us as a human being, with this brain that we have and these thoughts and desires and feelings that we experience. It's just keeping it all in a balance, isn't it? And that's the hard part, it really is, as we do become very, very focused in or upset or, you know, just worried about one little thing that then can change everything in our lives. So just encourage you to keep that balance, enjoy every day, get out there, or not. I mean, sometimes you do just need to just stay in bed, you know. It's very rare I've had days like that, but they do come along every now and again. When that happens, you just do it if you can.
He would have carried it.
Anyway, I'm rabbiting on. It's time to find something for dinner. It was a lovely walk. It's a lovely day. I feel a little bit more refreshed now. A glorious walk around a noble city. Brighton? Well, it's got Bright in its name. The city's slogan is Brighton, never normal. That pretty much encapsulates this lovable seaside town. Come and give it a visit. And just say hi. The Story Pilgrim was written and produced by me, Darren Hill. The amazing Anya Backer gave us the original harp music on Shaun the Harp. For more information on myself and Anya, please go to our website, thestorypilgrim.com, or just search any of the social medias, The Story Pilgrim, and you'll find us on there. Say hi. Until the next time, keep listening, and buen camino.